The precinct smelled of wet wool, stale coffee, and the particular metallic tang of fear that clung to the lower ranks of the NYPD like a second skin. Pearl stood just inside the threshold, her coat dripping onto the linoleum in a dark, spreading pool that reflected the flickering fluorescent tube overhead. She had come here not because she believed in the institution, but because she believed in the man who ran it. Sergeant Michael Doyle was a monument to exhaustion, a structure of bone and bad habits holding up the weight of a city that wanted him dead. He sat behind his desk, a fortress of paperwork and petty grievances, his face buried in a ledger that seemed to have no end. He did not look up when she entered. He didn't need to. He could hear the shift in the air, the subtle change in pressure that signaled trouble. Doyle was a creature of routine, and Pearl was a variable he had not accounted for in his daily calculations. She waited, letting the silence stretch until it became uncomfortable, until the only sound was the scratching of his pen and the distant, rhythmic thud of rain against the high, barred windows. Finally, he lowered the pen. The scratch stopped. He rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands, a gesture so familiar, so human, that it almost made her forgive him for everything he had failed to do. "You're tracking mud on my floor, Casey," Doyle said. His voice was gravel, worn smooth by decades of shouting over sirens and whispering over graves. It carried the faint, ghostly echo of an Irish lilt, present only when he was tired, which was always. "I'm tracking truth," Pearl replied, her voice clipped, sharp as a needle point. She stepped further into the room, closing the distance between them. "And I'm tracking you, Sergeant. You've been avoiding my calls for 3 days." Doyle sighed, a long, ragged exhale that seemed to deflate his entire posture. He leaned back in his chair, the wood creaking under his weight. "I've been busy, Miss Casey. We have a murder. A real one this time, not your father's stage suicide, not some theatrical display for the press, a body in the docks. Kid, maybe 16, throat cut, clean, professional." He looked at her then, his eyes dark, hollowed out by sleeplessness and the endless, grinding bureaucracy of the precinct. "I don't have time for ghosts." "I'm not a ghost," Pearl said. "I'm the daughter of the man you refused to arrest, the man you let walk away while you counted the cash in your drawer." The air in the room changed instantly. The humidity dropped. The temperature seemed to fall 10 degrees. Doyle froze. His hand, resting on the edge of the desk, tightened until the knuckles turned white. For a moment, he looked like a man who had just seen his own executioner standing in the doorway. Then, slowly, he shook his head, a small, dismissive motion. "Don't," he said, "don't you start with me. You think you know what happened. You think you can paint me in black and white because it makes your story easier. You don't know anything." "I know you looked away," Pearl said, her voice dropping to a whisper, dangerous and low. "I know that when my father started asking questions about the Halloway contracts, about the transit unions, about the money that flowed from Blackwell's townhouse to the precinct's budget, you looked away. I know you took the envelope. I know you took the bribe." Doyle stood up. He was taller than she remembered, broader, but he looked fragile, like a statue made of ash. He rounded the desk, moving toward her with a slow, deliberate pace that suggested he was afraid she might shatter if he moved too quickly. Or perhaps he was afraid she might strike him. "Get out," he said. "No," Pearl said. She didn't move. She planted her feet on the wet linoleum, anchoring herself against the tide of his anger. "I'm not leaving until you tell me why. Why did you protect Halloway? Why did you protect Blackwell? My father was investigating corruption, Sergeant. He was trying to save this city from being sold off piece by piece. And you sold him out." Doyle laughed, a dry, humorless sound that bounced off the walls. "Save the city? Your father was a fool. He thought he could fight the ocean with a spoon. He thought he could shine a light into the sewers and expect the rats to scatter. They don't scatter, Miss Casey. They multiply. They thrive in the dark." He stopped a few feet from her, close enough that she could smell the stale tobacco on his breath, the scent of cheap cigars and desperation. Halloway wasn't just a contractor. He was the spine of this precinct. "Without him, we starve. Without Blackwell's, contributions, half the officers on this force wouldn't have coats on their backs in winter. You think justice pays the rent? You think morality keeps the lights on?" "It's not about money," Pearl said, though her voice wavered slightly. "It's about honor, about duty." "Duty," Doyle repeated, tasting the word like it was sour milk. "You talk about duty like it's a virtue. It's a chain, Miss Casey. It binds us to the people who hold the purse strings. My father died in the trenches of the Great War. He came back with a limp and a lung full of gas. What did he get for his sacrifice? A pension that bought him a month of whiskey and a grave in a plot he couldn't afford. I didn't take Holloway's money because I was corrupt. I took it because I wanted to keep the lights on. I wanted to make sure my partners could eat. I wanted to make sure the kids on the beat didn't have to face a gunman with a rusty revolver. He turned away from her, walking to the window. He looked out at the rain-slick street, at the gas lamps glowing like sickly eyes in the dusk. Your father? He didn't understand that. He thought he was a knight. He thought he was saving the world. But he was just poking a hornet's nest with a stick. And when the hornets came, I had to choose. Do I stand with the knight and get stung to death? Or do I step aside and let the hive survive? You chose the hive, Pearl said. And now the hive has eaten your conscience. My conscience? Doyle turned back, his face twisted in a grimace of pain. My conscience is a luxury I can't afford. Look at me, Miss Casey. Really look at me. What do you see? A monster? A villain in your little play? Or do you see a man who has spent 30 years cleaning up the messes of men like Holloway and Blackwell, who has signed the warrants that lock up the thieves while the kings walk free, who has buried his friends in unmarked graves because the families couldn't pay the fees? He walked back to his desk and picked up a photograph, worn and creased at the edges. He held it out to her. It was a picture of a group of officers, young, smiling, their uniforms crisp and new. In the center was a younger Doyle, his arm around a man with a kind face and bright eyes. That was Tommy O'Malley, Doyle said softly. My best friend. He started asking questions about the waterfront unions, just like your father. He thought he could change things, so I did what I had to do. I told him to drop it. I told him it wasn't worth it. He didn't listen. He kept digging. And one night he fell off a pier. Accident, they said. Drunk, they said. I knew better, but I said nothing, because if I spoke up, I would have been next. And if I was next, who would protect the others? Who would keep the precinct from collapsing into chaos? Pearl looked at the photograph. She saw the boy Doyle had been before the world had ground him down into dust. She felt a pang of sympathy, sharp and unexpected, but she pushed it aside. Sympathy was a weakness. Sympathy got people killed. So you let him die, she said. I kept the rest of you alive, Doyle corrected. I kept the station running. I kept the books balanced. I kept the darkness at bay, just enough so that you could walk down the street without getting mugged. Is that not worth something? Is that not a form of service? It's cowardice, Pearl said. It's complicity. You didn't keep the darkness at bay, Sergeant. You fed it. You fed it every dollar you took, every lie you told, every life you sacrificed on the altar of convenience. My father wasn't just asking questions. He was trying to stop you. He was trying to expose the rot before it consumed the whole building. And you killed him to protect your secret. Doyle's fist slammed the desk. The sound ricocheted through the precinct, loud and violent. Papers scattered from the stacks. The ledger toppled to the floor. Pearl braced for the blow, but he stayed his hand. She held his gaze, steady and unyielding. I didn't kill him, Doyle roared. Do you hear me? I didn't kill him. I tried to warn him. I tried to tell him to stop. I sent him an envelope. Cash, enough to buy his silence. Enough to buy him a ticket out of the city. I told him to leave, to go west, to start over. But he was stubborn. He was proud. He thought he was righteous. He thought he could win, so he kept digging. And when the bullet hit him, when they told me it was suicide, I knew it was Holloway's men. I knew it was Blackwell's reach. And I did nothing. Because if I admitted that I had taken the bribe, if I admitted that I had failed my duty, I would have lost everything. My badge, my pension, my reputation, and worse. I would have lost the trust of the men who relied on me, so I stayed silent. I buried the truth, and I let your father die. The admission hung in the air, heavy and suffocating. It was not an apology. It was not a confession of guilt. It was a confession of failure. Doyle had not killed Pearl's father, but he had allowed it to happen. He had chosen his career over justice, his safety over truth, his survival over his friend. And in doing so, he had become part of the machinery that destroyed her family. Pearl felt a coldness spread through her chest, settling deep in her bones. She had expected denial. She had expected rage. She had not expected this raw, naked honesty. It was more painful than any lie. It stripped away the mythology of the police, the idea of the blue line, the sacred bond between officer and citizen. It revealed the rot beneath, the greed and fear that drove the system. Why are you telling me this? She asked, her voice barely audible. Because you're going to burn it all down, Doyle said. He He looked at her, really looked at her, and for the first time she saw the fear in his eyes. Not fear of her, but fear for her. You think you're fighting a battle against Blackwell and Holloway. You're not. You're fighting the entire structure of the city. And you will lose. You will lose because you are alone. You have no allies. You have no power. You have only your grief and your anger. And those are poor weapons against men who control the banks and the newspapers and the courts. He reached into his desk drawer and pulled out a small, leather-bound notebook. It was worn, the cover stained with coffee rings and fingerprints. He placed it on the desk between them. "This is my copy," he said. "Of the Holloway ledger, the one your father was looking for, I kept it. Not because I wanted to use it, but because I was afraid. Afraid that if I destroyed it, I would be destroying the only proof that I ever tried to do the right thing, that I ever tried to stop them." Pearl stared at the notebook. It was small, insignificant, but it contained the names, the dates, the amounts. It was the key to unlocking the conspiracy that had destroyed her father and nearly destroyed her. "If I take this," she said, "you will be implicated. You will lose your badge. You will go to prison." "I know," Doyle said. He smiled, a sad, broken smile. "But maybe it will be enough to bring them down. Maybe it will be enough to give your father peace. Maybe it will be enough to save you." Pearl looked at the notebook, then at Doyle. She saw the exhaustion in his face, the resignation in his posture. He was offering himself up as a sacrifice, not for justice, but for redemption. He was buying his soul with his career. She reached out and took the notebook. It was heavier than she expected. It felt like lead in her hand. "Thank you," she said. "Do not thank me," Doyle said. "Run, Miss Casey, before they realize what I have done, before they come for you, and before they come for me." Pearl turned and walked toward the door. She did not look back, she could not. If she looked back, she might see the man she had trusted, the symbol of order, crumbling into dust. And she might break, but she could not break. Not now, not when the truth was in her hands. Pearl turned her collar up against the biting wind, the damp chill settling into her bones as she walked away from the tenement block. The fire had taken the sketch, the evidence, and the door that should have been open, leaving only the slick cobblestones and the churn of the Black River ahead. She did not look back at the burning structure or the shadow of her father's grave. Those things were Alina's burden now. With only the path forward narrow, treacherous, and leading into the uncertain dark, she kept her pace steady, letting the city's indifference swallow the sound of her footsteps. The rain continued to fall, washing the streets clean, one drop at a time, but the stain of corruption ran deep, deeper than the rain could reach. And Pearl knew that the battle was just beginning. She had the evidence. She had the motive, but she did not have the power. And power, she was learning, was not something you could find in a ledger. It was something you had to take, and she intended to take it.